Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strebel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
Just read the verse and you tell me to go along when you get ready to do that.
Verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, "I fear my lord, the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king." Now you see, Daniel had requested of Melzer that let me just drink what I want. Let me live on puff. Let me have my food. I don't want the wine. And he said, "Well, now then, I've been commanded to give you this. Here's your supper. This is your meat. This is your diet. And I'm supposed to see to it that you eat. And now then you've asked me to go against my king. And if he sees you eating that when I'm supposed to be giving you this, then he says my head's in danger." Alright? So,
they didn't think anything about cutting a man's head off, did they?
No. It didn't bother him. Then said Daniel to Melzer, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Daniel said to him, "Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants." So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzer took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Now you notice that he did that on his own. He was still sticking his neck out. "As for the poor children, God..." Now notice, this answers the critics. Where did Daniel get his wisdom? They said he wasn't a wise man. Well, in Ezekiel also, you'll find that in one of his words to Tyre, that what about the wisdom of Tyre, wisdom of Daniel? Hath the king of Tyre more wisdom than Daniel? So the Bible elsewhere vindicates every charge and proves every charge against that's been brought against the book of Daniel is that those charges are false. Now, I didn't finish it, I think I said a while ago that the critics brought 4 charges. The charges against the book of Daniel are historical errors, the language. Now, when he mentions the 6 kinds of musical instruments, 3 of them are in the Greek language. And these professional critics, they say, oh, look at that. There's a Greek word there in the book of Daniel. It couldn't have been written in 500 B.C. It had to wait till Alexander had come to Babylon, see, to bring the Greek language into prominence down here. And they use that. But the harp, the flute, and the dulcimer, the language is the same, they tell us, or that I'm told, in the different languages, that a piano is a piano wherever it is. A harp is a harp, whether it's in Germany or England or America or Greece or Italy or where, see? But anyway, that's the basis on which they object to it. And then they object on the basis of prophecy. Now, the 2nd chapter of Daniel, the 7th chapter of Daniel, and the 8th chapter of Daniel, and the 11th chapter, they describe so minutely future events, and even the liberal admits that, well, now, if it was written then, that would have been prophecy. But they say it's somebody that had lived after it had become history and wrote it under the guise of prophecy. And they said that was some pious Jew that did that. Well, he wouldn't be very pious if he tried to deceive the people like that, would he? And then the other basis for the objection to the book of Daniel is doctrinal grounds on the basis of its doctrine. They say that it's ahead of its time. Nowhere in the Old Testament do you find the doctrine of the resurrection taught as it's taught in the book of Daniel. See, Daniel 12 tells us about the resurrection of the just and of the unjust. See? And they say that nobody wrote in the terms of the resurrection in that manner until 200 years before Christ. And that gets it down below 165 B.C. in the days of Epiphanes. Now, the other doctrine is the doctrine of angels. These liberals, they can't stand the doctrine of angels. Well, Daniel said to the king that God has sent his angel, see, to deliver. And then you have in several places, 6th chapter, 8th chapter, 9th, 10th chapter, and the 12th chapter, you have angels referred to in the book of Daniel. All right, but here's the point. If the angels, if that disqualifies the book of Daniel, then the angel that appeared to Abraham would disqualify the book of Genesis. Because an angel appeared to Abraham, see? And angels appeared to Jacob. God's presence in angelic form went before Moses down into Egypt. The angels did wondrously, according to the judges, you know, about Manoah and you come on down in the New Testament, why angels rolled the stone away and then sat on it. The angels came and ministered to Jesus in the wilderness. Well, in temptation. Well, now, if there's no angels in Genesis, there's no angels in Luke. There's no angels. Angels appeared to Zacharias and told him about the announcement of the birth of John the Baptist, didn't he? And then you take the two angels mentioned by name, Gabriel and Michael, are mentioned. And they're mentioned in Daniel. They're mentioned in Luke, appearing to Mary, you see. Now, if Gabriel didn't appear then, he didn't appear here. If he appeared here, what's wrong with it being in the book of Daniel, you see? But they say that language, the doctrine of angelology, and its development was much later revelation. God didn't reveal it at that time. And angels appeared and defeated the Assyrians. 185,000 died, you know. Well, so that's the four bases of attacks on the book of Daniel. It's based on history. It's based on the different language in which this book is written. It's based on prophecy, saying that Daniel couldn't have foretold these events. And then it's the doctrine of the book of Daniel is too high. It's of the doctrine wasn't revealed. What he speaks about wasn't revealed until later. Well, now this book of Daniel instead of ending with Antiochus Epiphanes, it tells us about the Messiah being cut off. It tells us about Jesus coming. It tells about his death, see? It tells about reconciliation for sin. It tells about the sanctuary. And so instead of ending with Antiochus Epiphanes, it goes on till the second coming of Christ, till Christ shall come back. Well, that's how far Daniel goes. All right, then, as for the four children, God gave them knowledge. That answers. And skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, that's a gift of God, see? Now, they talk about, and God gave certain gifts, talking about over in the 13th, 14th chapter of 1 Corinthians. Why, they were recipients of that gift long before that, see? Now, at the end of the days, now, with reference to vision and dreams, now, you'll notice, you ought to notice those two words here and the way it's used in Daniel. A dream is something that originates within man. It's man's thoughts. It comes from him. Vision is something that originates with God. You see? And in the first six chapters of Daniel, you have history. You have the history of Nebuchadnezzar. You have the history of Belshazzar. You have the history of Darius and Cyrus. And in all of these, in the first six chapters, you have dreams. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed a dream. He dreamed, had another dream. He had another dream, see? And he departs out of the book of Daniel with a dream and the result of that dream. Daniel giving the interpretation to it. But then you get over in beginning with the seventh chapter of Daniel, and Daniel didn't have a dream. Daniel had a vision. The vision came to Daniel in the third year of Belshazzar. See? In other words, God gave Daniel visions. It originated in heaven. It originated with God. God gave, permitted Daniel to have visions, but he gave dreams to Nebuchadnezzar. See? There's a difference in the, you might say, the quality of the thing. And yet, the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar and the visions of Daniel, Daniel's visions was an enlargement and a refinement of Daniel, of Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. It was additions. And you'll find they cover the same territory. Now the whole purpose of this first chapter is the first chapter of Daniel, the introductory, but, the whole matter is borne out in the fourth chapter. Let's see, verse 4. Look at verse 17. Now, here's the whole purpose of it, where we're getting. The matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basis of men. Now, verse 17 tells you that whatever God does, it's right, and God has a right to do whatever he does. In other words, the sovereignty of God is what man's got to realize, and that's what the book of Daniel is all about. Look at verse 25. Beginning down about the last two clauses. Till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. That's the latter portion of verse 25.
God's still doing that, you think?
Yeah, yes, sir. Verse 34. Now look at verse 34. The same chapter. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? And then Nebuchadnezzar bows out of the book of history in verse 37. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Brother, he learned the lesson, didn't he? That was his conclusion. All right, now here's another thing about the way that this book opens. In verse 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, that's all said about it. Now, if that had been a modern-day reporter giving you the history of a king of Washington, now suppose Washington was invaded. Suppose the Russians had come over here. You think there'd just been one sentence appear in the morning's headline about the king of Russia coming into Washington? Well, man, it had been blown up, made, and all sort of things. But the calmness of this matter shows that proves the truthfulness of the thing, that it's true, that it bears its internal evidence. The very expression of it is not only common sense, but it shows that he's not trying to blow up something. He's not trying to be the reporter's not trying to be the chief in the deal. He's simply, Daniel is just simply telling the facts in calm, simple manner. In verse 18, now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Now 3 years has already taken place. See? Daniel and the three Hebrew boys, they done got their sheepskin. They went to school in 3 years over here, see? In verse 5 of chapter 1, and the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine, which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now, notice in 19. See? Verse 18. Then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before the king, before Nebuchadnezzar. See, that's the end of those days, the end of 3 years. God had already given wisdom. There's already given understanding and the ability to learn whatever Nebuchadnezzar's teachers, professors had for him, because he was schooled, he was in science, in the language of the Chaldeans. See? They were the astronomers and astrologers of the day. They studied the stars. They knew a lot about them, a lot more about them than we know today. And when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, what does the scripture say? The wise men in the east saw the star in the west, and they knew that the king had been born. Where'd they get that information? See? Daniel, God had given Daniel this wisdom. And Daniel was the head. He later was appointed the chief of the wise men of Babylon, of the east. the Persians, the Babylonians, they got their training and teaching from Daniel. That's how God imparted his knowledge over there. They didn't need somebody to run over and tell them from the day that it happened. God was able to tell, to put within the minds of these wise Chaldeans, wise men, you see, so that when he was born, he'd be recognized. And that's why they came, these 700 miles or more, had to go up the Euphrates and then down. And the Bible puts it as 2 years, see, from the time, you know, Herod, when Herod wanted to know just when the star appeared, and after he inquired diligently from the wise men, he said that then he fixed the punishment upon the boy babies, the male boy, male children, from 2 years and under, from the time which they diligently inquired of the wise men, of the time when they saw the star. In other words, they were nearly 2 years in making the journey from the time they saw the star till they came. And when they came, they didn't find the manger, Jesus in the crib, but they found a young child. See? And so that just shows you, and that's where I think, and I think this is the background to understand the birth of Jesus with reference to those signs. And the wise men, I think Daniel is the background for that. And that's where we get our first intimation. And must be interpreted in that light. Now, at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuch brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, they're standing before him. They're getting, he's gonna give them the tossle now, see. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none. Now notice, it wasn't just Daniel, Hananiah, and Azariah, and Mishael, but there were other, the Chaldeans, his own scholars, his own prospects that were teaching the science. They were included in the same class. They in there were Daniel. But now then it says, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Now, if there's any room for advancement, if there's any room for learning, still learning, Daniel here now, just after they finished the first 3 years, say he's only about 23 years old now. And he lives, Nebuchadnezzar reigns for 45, and the kingdom lasts for 73 years. So, and Daniel outlived the Babylonian Empire. He was still reigning and ruling and recognized as a prime minister like Joseph, even after the Medes, when Cyrus came and took over, you see. Well, so Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. Now that verse tells us, is just added there to show how long that since this is an introduction, it tells his entry to Babylon, it tells his early days, tells how he resisted the king's special privileges, and he just wanted to be treated, live on a simple diet like Elijah and John the Baptist. And after having done so,
Why, they were, even the king pronounced them 10 times better than all, than any in his land, in all of his realm. And brother, that included all the way up to Mesopotamia. That included Egypt, because his authority was over Egypt. Whenever a kingdom in ancient times, whenever they exerted their power, whenever they showed their supremacy, and they couldn't revolt against it, well, then they recognized that they were their servants, you see, and that's all they had to do. That's the way they extended their kingdom, their territory. They didn't have to go down there, and of course they did. They kept units wherever they thought there might be an outbreak or trouble. That's why you read in the New Testament, you read about the city of Philippi, where Paul and Silas went, you know, to preach the gospel. Well, the Philippi was a Roman colony. It was a place where there was the population was government. In other words, it was sold, nothing but soldiers. Very few civilians there, just enough to carry on commerce and trade. But that was a very important town. Well, there's different cities throughout Asia Minor that was the same way, because of the that the cities were beneficial for the time of war. Well, now
I tell you what, listen.
All right. That's the first chapter. We can start right there. Yeah.
All
right.
You've been talking. I don't know where you're at.
Well,
I'll tell you if I knew it gone.
I don't know where
you're. Anything else you want to say? Well, they'd run on out there. I see that. That's really interesting. I appreciate everything you said.
Well, now that's of course there's still a lot in Jeremiah. Now, I mean, if you really want to get this picture real good, you need to study everything in Jeremiah that pertains to Babylon. See, there's more said in the Bible about Nebuchadnezzar than any other heathen king in the world that ever lived.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.